Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Psychotherapist Richard Hogan, good morning.
Good morning, Brendan.
And obviously how to stay in a long-term relationship, because it's not always plain sailing and sometimes you can stay together, and we'll get to all that. And I suppose how to stay married, brackets, happily.
Exactly. Yeah. My wife's at home taking notes.
Yeah. Well, you and I can talk about this objectively because we're both perfect.
Absolutely.
We're fine.
We're immune to this stuff.
Let's start at the start. So before you get into a big relationship, should we be looking at ourselves first? Like, who am I? What do I want out of life?
Absolutely, Brendan. 100%. People, we often fall into a relationship. We fall into the job we do. And then we're 20 years in and we kind of wonder, was this the right thing for me to get involved in? Was this the right relationship for me to go into? Is this what I want from a relationship? We change so dramatically over the course of our lives, don't we? I mean, you know, the human brain doesn't stop developing until about 25. And so you literally are a different person. You think differently from, say, 19, which would have been the boomers when they got married. My parents got married in 1920. They would have been married, you know, 5 years before their brain stopped developing. And so you change dramatically as you move through life. And I suppose asking yourself those questions, what do I want out of a relationship? I mean, something we don't think about is values. I have to be honest, I did think about these things. I think maybe it was because of the family I came up with. I was very, very cognizant of those ideas when I was going into my romantic life and all that. I was thinking, will this be a good person to have a child with? I was thinking those things when I was dating girls, you know, and going out with people. Would this be a person to stand in the trenches with you? Are our values aligned? You know, because I was thinking down the line.
That must have been very attractive to me.
But I was thinking those things. And I think, you know, it stood to me when I met the person. I thought, yes, absolutely, these values align. This really aligns with the way I look at things and my beliefs. And then, of course, when difficult things came into our lives, which they did, you know, our youngest child was born with a very serious illness. And we were faced with, you know, real tragic outcome there. And we were sitting in the car park together, you know, with the kids, two other daughters in the car. For 3 months there, we were in intensive care with our baby. It was our values, our belief system, but fundamentally our sense of humour that kept us going in those really dark moments.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. We're jumping ahead there, but sense of humour.
Yeah, huge.
I think if you had nothing else like that, would keep you going a lot of the time, wouldn't it? Yeah. So that's looking at ourselves, and values is a good word. I think we forget about it. What are my core values in life? And then I suppose, as you say, most of us muddle into relationships, serendipity, sex, chemistry, all these things.
Passion.
But should we have some idea what we want in a partner as well? Like, not a shopping list, but...
Yeah, but I think we should need to fundamentally, I think this is something that should get talked about more, you know, to students in school. Our early attachments, Brendan, they're very important to think about because they are the fundamentals of us and our understanding of each other and how we relate to people and how we have relationships and how we think about ourselves and how we think about others. And so there's four main attachments. And what I'd often see working clinically is that someone with an anxious attachment will often marry someone with an avoidant attachment. And that's kind of exciting in the early days of, you know, the pursuit and the chase and the avoidance and all that kind of stuff. And that can be really, you know, desire provoking and all that. But when you bring children into your life and things get a little bit more complicated and the stresses come on and, you know, finances come in, and all of a sudden that difference can be a huge problem as you move down the road. And so it's trying to figure out your own attachment style. What is my attachment style?
How will I figure out my attachment style?
First of all, I would always think about, you know, how do I think about myself? Someone with an anxious attachment style will think about themselves in lower terms, and they'll think about other people in much higher terms. So they'll always gain approval from other people. They'll never have a sense of their own approval, right? And so they'll seek out people.
And their parents did this to them.
They F you up your mom and dad. They didn't mean to, but they do, right? But, you know, and they themselves, your parents, were also reared by attachment styles. You know what I mean?
Okay, so the anxious person is taking their validation from others.
Other people.
Okay.
The avoidant person has a very good sense of self, but quite suspicious of other people and doesn't easily let other people in. And you can see why that could be quite problematic as you move on in life.
Okay.
You know, and there's so so much in this piece here that you could.
And
talk
then the
about.
Ideal is secure attachment.
Secure attachment, which yeah. Is, but here's the thing: these aren't concrete.
Can you be all of them?
You can be disorganized.
Just asking for a friend.
Yeah, asking for a friend. You can be all of them, for sure. But the thing is, they're not concrete. You can actually leverage them. I was far more, I'd say, disorganized in my early 20s than I am now, let's say, in my attachments. And that's because my wife reared me.
Really? Yeah.
I know, I'm joking. But you know what I mean? Because you met someone who was really solid and helped you to kind of think about yourself in much more solid terms. Of course, that changes who you are.
Okay.
And so, or attached.
And so you need to suss out the other person then and try and figure out, is there something off here with their attachment style that's not going to gel well with
how do
mine,
we argue,
yeah?
You know? A really important
thing.
Yeah,
is that
how
it?
Do we are, how do they express love? How do they give love to me, you know? Because it's something I'd see a lot in my clinic, and this is something someone said to me a couple of years ago, you know? I was working with this couple, and he said, you know, she said in the conversation, I'd love him just to tell me I looked beautiful once. Without me prompting it, I'd love him to say, you know, I look beautiful. You look beautiful. And he said, you know, I love her. I just don't know how to love her. And I was thinking, that is that language, you know. Sometimes we miscommunicate. We don't understand what the other person needs. We don't have the communication style for the person that we're in a relationship with. And understanding what your style is and understanding what your early attachment is would be really important for seeking out. Because it's such an important thing going into a relationship with someone, Brendan.
Yeah.
You know, it's the stuff of a good life. It's the stuff of a healthy life. You know, it's that grand study, you know, the meaning of life and the happiness and the sustained happiness in your life is all about your relationships with people and your relationships with your family and friends. So you're setting up something really significant going into your life. And so we often fall into it. And what I'm trying to say is try to figure yourself out at the start of this conversation. Figure yourself out first. Yeah. Before you get into it and think about what is it I want, what was my attachment like my early, you know, primary
and
caregiver?
And in terms of figuring out the other person then, I suppose is the shortcut to it to look at their parents' marriage?
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking of myself here now.
Yeah.
It can be. And look at how they express love to each other. Look at how the family, you know, deal with conflict together. And look at how their values and look at their beliefs. That doesn't mean that a child can come up in a dysfunctional family and be dysfunctional. They can come out of that situation and be quite secure in themselves. It's harder, you know what I mean? So okay. there's a lot
but
of...
Let's give people the juice here. There can be clues to be found in your in your other half's family.
Of course.
You should be keeping an eye
you should
and searching for clues as to
exactly.
How it might... Okay, okay.
And Brendan... Because this romantic idea of love and all that is quite new for us as Homo sapiens. I mean, you know, it wasn't always about
is
love.
Is it a reliable thing to base a lifetime together on or a long-term relationship or marriage, romantic love?
It is, but not in the Hollywood sense because there's going to be a lot of problems there. You know, you're going to meet, like I said there about our child, you're going to meet a lot of serious life events together. But there's nothing more magical than sharing life with somebody as you grow up together and you change together and you mature together. You know, there's not, I think, I don't think, and you have that shared complicity. I think we can often live in a society that's quite anti-family and anti-relationships and all that kind of stuff. And I think there's nothing more important when you have children and all that kind of stuff to have all that going on and to have a really healthy relationship. But that doesn't mean it's perfect. And that doesn't mean it's not, at times your romance won't dip and there won't be a nadir in your, say, your passion. You know, I often think, you know, in your 40s and 50s, that early passion, those real intimacy, that's an affair you have with someone at the start, you know, where all that oxytocin, which fires when a child is a baby, attachments, and when you meet somebody, it fires. So it's that early attachment. All that stuff is going off when you meet someone for the first time. That's fantastic. That's brilliant. That's that passion. But you know the phrase, it's okay to be okay. It's okay to be okay at intimacy. You know what I mean? People think it's just me.
Like fireworks every time.
Well, let's be honest. The kids would be disturbed if you were in that fire, if you were in the throes of those passions, putting the cheese on the sandwich and you were mauling the face off each other, I don't think the kids would be too appreciative of that. And so, you know, that those passions fade, you know, those passions can fade for, they're not so significant. I suppose what I'm trying to say here is that I meet so many people who are kind of almost coyly and shamefully telling me that they're not as intimate as they were before.
Yeah.
And it's okay. We all go through that. I mean, those fires can't keep burning that. But maybe it's something deeper. Maybe it's something a little bit more profound. Maybe the passion moves towards more emotional depths and intimacy than it was when you were 21 together or whatever it is.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
But
that's important.
You should be endeavouring to keep up the physical.
Yes, definitely.
Like, just keep doing it anyway.
Yeah.
It's not
well,
like
absolutely.
Hollywood every time, yeah?
Exactly. And that's the kind of thing, you know, because intimacy is such a healing and restorative thing. It's such an important part of a bond, that oxytocin. I mean, if you think about it, when you're intimate with your partner, how do you feel afterwards? You feel connected. You know, you feel connected, maybe something even bigger, you know what I mean? And so that's a really healthy and restorative thing. But it's what I'm trying to say is don't feel the stigma around the fact that maybe it's not what it was. You know, Evan Boland asked this question, one of her famous poems called Love. Will we ever live as intensely as we did before? And it's kind of, well, maybe it's not that intensity of that passion when you meet someone for the first time, but maybe it's a deeper emotional intensity.
Okay. Now, we're jumping ahead a bit. I still have some questions about sussing the person out early on. You talked there about there will be hard times, right?
Of course.
So in the early days of a relationship, often there are no hard times.
No,
often,
it's, the, right? it's the affair.
But do you need to kind of also get a sense of, it's good to get a sense of what that person is like when things aren't going
it's
so well.
It's really important to see that side of your partner in the early days. How do they respond to conflict? How do they respond to an argument when you have an argument with somebody? I mean, I don't think you'll go into a marriage and live together without arguing and without having a fight. And that's how you resolve that. And seeing that in the early days, you know, that's kind of seeing somebody as they are. And this is what my grandmother used to always say to me, you'll never know someone until you live with them. And she's kind of right.
Because
you don't know what that pressure, you know, you don't know the intensity of being around someone all the time.
And arguments-wise, I suppose, like, there's aggressive, there's passive-aggressive. Yeah. Then contempt, which we know is not a good way to
argue.
Very
unhealthy. Silence would be another way. You know, kind of like, you know, how people often, you know, when I work with children, let's say, they'd say, you know, they're blanked when their parents fight with them, they just cut off communication. It's very unhealthy.
Okay, that sounds like the worst.
One of the worst for a child, I suppose, the screaming and roaring, that kind of dysfunctionality is very bad as well.
What's good conflict look like?
Well, look, we all have conflict and how to resolve it. But here's the thing, a really important thing is what we say really matters, Brendan. You know, and sometimes we say terrible things to our partner. You know, we launch out really hurtful things. We know exactly what's going to really chip away at their self-confidence.
Yeah, in a way, the worst things you ever say are potentially to your partner.
Exactly. And you say the worst things and then you're wondering why the intimacy might be dropped down or why, you know, it's taking us longer to get back into this relationship. Because all those things that we say are there. They don't go away. They're there. And so it's about watching how you communicate during an argument. And we say those really hurtful things. And this is the reality. When we feel so vulnerable, when we feel under threat, we launch out barbs to the other person, right? Because we're feeling fearful. We've been attacked here. We feel very vulnerable. And if we expressed that vulnerability rather than the barbs and the hurtful comments, we'd have a far more successful and healthy relationship.
Very good.
Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think there is another key there as well. As much as the sense of humour, the phrase, can we just move on from this, is very powerful. Isn't it just sometimes like
we have
things
argument.
Get said and that kind of thing and we know they weren't meant.
We say things in the heat of an argument. Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned the moving in there, which is probably another stage of things and a real eye-opener.
Well, you get to see somebody as they are. You know, the good, the bad and the ugly when you're living with someone. I mean, that's the reality because it's very hard.
Is that when the romantic love bit ends normally if you move in?
I think that can be real. The first throws of that are fantastic, aren't they? I'm thinking about myself here when we moved into our first house. That's so exciting, isn't it?
Your first house
opening the
there's
fridge.
A different romance in playing house, isn't
exactly,
there?
Exactly, there's that whole
to the supermarket.
Romantic, you know what I mean? It's so exciting. You know, but then, of course, I think where the romance might start to fade, it's that Adrienne Rich thing. She, you know, she thought the studio would keep itself no dust upon the furniture of love. It's the dust that comes in, the chores, the divesting of, you know, who's going to bring the bins out and who's going to do that, who's going to do this thing, who's going to pay for the, you know, who's going to get the sound, who's going to get the shopping. That regularity that creeps into a relationship. When you go in with the biggest, greatest ideas of you won't live like your parents lived, you know what I mean? We're going to be romantic and
how do we stop all that the cozy domesticity from kind of taking the love or the
well, you know, things? It's such a good question, and I'm very aware that it's two men talking about this, right?
Yeah.
But the reality that steals the cozy domesticity is the inequity of divesting of what happens. I think honestly now, and I'm saying this genuinely from my own experience, working clinically for so many years and working with, you know, so many clients. In my mother's day, the bloomers, you know, boomers, they were, mums stayed at home, right, and were looking after the family. And in say, Generation X and what's coming now and all that, mums generally go out to work. And then they're also saddled with all the chores that the boomer moms had. And so it's not just the, you know, taking care of the what's happening at home. It's going out to work. It's doing that part. It's coming back into the house. And then it's taking care of all of the house. And then you move into your 40s and your parents are elderly. And so now you can, you know, you can be really that romantic love. And that's one of the biggest things I see in my couple's work.
Resentment
and the inequity of chores and the inequity.
So you need to actually sit down and like not quite a contract like, but do you need to sit down and discuss this and make a deal like?
You see, it's a cultural thing, isn't it? I mean, there's still those negative ideas about a woman's role. Let's, you know, if we're being honest, and that's there, and it slowly transmutes and it incrementally takes place, and all of a sudden you're sitting there, you know, you're working very hard, very long hours, you're working probably a very big job or whatever it is, and then you're coming home and you're doing all of the sandwich, all of the chore, the washing, the cleaning, the kids, the sandwich, the dropping, the collecting, the parents. It's unsustainable, Brendan, and it is really the kind of the stuff of like midlife disquiet in your relationship where one person is, you know, not as invested or not taking on the responsibilities that they should be taking on in the house and what's required here in this really complicated scenario of, okay, you know, middle age and kids.
So the romance and the intimacy is kind of the more exciting part. Yeah,
that's the early stuff when those roles aren't there.
Actually, I hear you very much saying that this is a really key part.
You know, it is. It falls.
If they took one thing away from today.
Yeah, I think men also struggle with kind of the changing dynamic of what it is to be a man and what it is, what's required of you in your role as a man. Because that generation of fathers, what I was reared was coming home and hitting your kid in the cross of the head, kind of going, he was a great dad. That was what was a great dad in those days. You know, if you were just, hello, son, that was enough. So that dynamic has changed massively, and I think a lot of dads have stepped up to that, you know, really have stepped in there. But I think there is a still in our system, and that where it happens in the family, where the roles are not really equally met, and it really is the rotwood of a relationship because someone is really burnt out. And, you know, burnout is a real problem, and so someone has been too heavily relied on, and all families fall into homeostasis balance. And I meet this so much where the kids are lumping on, you know, and the husband is lumping on, let's say, and all of a sudden one person is overwhelmed and cannot sustain what's going on in the family. And
maybe men need to decide to notice more, notice what needs to be done, notice what's going on around them, and, you know.
You're right. I think we have to have a conversation about it.
Okay.
You know, what do you need? What do I do here? You know, what's my role here? What do you want? What you need? Because men are often unsure about what it is that they should be doing there. And so it's like, you know, let's have a conversation around it and figure out what should I do? What do you want me to do here? And what do I need you to do? A very open conversation about it. Because
women are going to say, like, he knows well what needs to be done. I shouldn't have to ask and that. But like, I think you're coming from a good place.
Yeah.
And the message is good. Okay. So before we get into talking about marriage then, for people who do decide to get married, and look, conscious, not for everybody, and probably fewer and fewer people doing it in a way, just one little thing. Should that person be feeling 100% confident
going in
the day on the morning of the wedding when they're walking up the aisle? Yeah. Do they need to listen to those freak out qualms they're having, like?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about my own mother-in-law came up and knocked on the door the night before the marriage to see was I turning up the next day. Do we have doubts going? Is that what you're asking? If we have doubts, does that mean a bad thing? I suppose we all have a little bit of obsessive thinking at times, and it's a very serious moment in your life, isn't it? So I suppose a negative thought could creep in there. Doesn't mean anything about the person that you're marrying. I don't know. I get it. I hear what you're saying, but listen, going into the world of marriage, it is an exciting thing to go into. But again, it's something that I wouldn't go into lightly and just fall into it. I would really think about the person that I'm going to go into this relationship. But because
and maybe before the wedding.
Yeah, before the wedding, I'd be thinking.
Okay.
I'd be having those thoughts.
Okay, come here. They say marriage is about compromise. Another key is probably to recognise that you can't always be right. Is it
as much as I want to be, Brendan?
Yeah,
we can't always be right. And I suppose, you know, that's a really important part. What we're talking about here, you know, the old real estate thing, location, location, location. It's communication, communication, okay, communication. Okay. That's what we're talking about. And is communication perfect? You know, are we perfect in our relationships? Are we perfect in our ideas and how we interact with each other? Absolutely not. Are we messy as human beings? We are very messy. Do we come from messy families ourselves? Yes, we do. And then we come from these systems that were messy, and we meet someone in the college bar or wherever we meet someone, walking down, this friend introduces us or whatever it is, we meet someone. And we come from these messy systems, and then we try to coherently make a story ourselves. And it's not always very coherent as a narrative goes to raise your kids or to be in a relationship. So allowing for that, you know, and understanding, yeah, of course, at times you're going to have to say, you know, I was wrong there. I mean, that's something I say to my daughter in a fight, an argument.
What'd
I
shouldn't say there?
I'd say
it again.
I'd say to my daughter, I'm sorry. Yeah. I shouldn't have said that.
The other word, I was wrong.
I was wrong.
Yeah, I was wrong.
I was wrong.
Yeah.
Parents don't often say that to their children. No. I was wrong. No. It's not a sign of weakness. I'm just trying to show her that actually, you know what, sometimes I am wrong and sometimes it's good to argue with me. I mean, you know, I want her to be able to argue with me so I can say I was wrong about that. Yeah, I shouldn't have said that, or I shouldn't have done that. Maybe that was an overreaction. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, that's a very powerful phrase.
I was wrong there.
And thing is, you can throw it around like confetti as well. Like once you don't kind of, you know, once it's not, you're not allowing it to injure yourself, right?
No, exactly.
I was wrong. It's costless. Like
one of the greatest ways of resolving a conflict is that when you're defensive, you don't resolve it. When you say, look, you know, I was wrong there. I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
Everything gets, you know, turned down a little bit.
Okay. A couple of other practical things. You're very big on keep your friendships.
Yeah, of course. The legacy of your marriage, which I see a lot now, you know, in my clinic, it's a terrible indictment to marriage if the legacy is you're having no fun in your life, isn't it?
Mm.
I mean, if you've lost that earlier self completely, if I'm just dad, you know what I mean? If that's just my own identity,
yeah,
because you can become just mom,
or just mom way more.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can become just mom very quickly, and it's like, no, don't allow that to happen, because your children will. Good news or bad news, whichever way you look at it, they will move on in life,
yeah,
and they will move out away from you. And what will be left is the question I'd be asking myself. And if it's just mom, well, that's or dad, that's problematic. You know what I mean? Because I was Richard Hogan before I met my wife, and that guy was was crack, you know, and he enjoyed life and he did things and he had loads of passions, loads of interests. And I try to keep those things going as I move through my life.
And friends are also a pressure valve in a marriage as well, aren't they? In terms of like being able to
get off a bit.
Yeah, we'll let off a bit to your friends as well.
Of course, you need, absolutely. You need, and then also, I live in a family, you know, I've got a wife and three daughters. So I'm in quite a feminized environment around me. I love meeting up with some of my friends, you know, just having a chat with the lads, kind of like you need that dynamic in your life, don't you, to allow that other self that's in here to be articulated and to express yourself. Yeah. And again, as you said, it's a valve, and they talk about their marriages and their relationships, and once we get over that, then we go back talking about being 15 or 16 again.
Yeah.
And all of that stuff is really healthy, and you know, that's the stuff that allows you to kind of like, you know, cathartically work out what you've been doing for the last 2 months in the family there. And that's really important, and I see it so often, Brendan. It's so important to talk about. I see so many men in their mid-40s and late-40s who are incredibly lonely. They've lost contact with their friends. I do think that, and I've said that here before, there's an epidemic of loneliness amongst men, and particularly Irish men. I think that's, and it's really sad. We need to stay in contact with our friends, and we have to be a bit more intentional about that, because as you said yourself, it's such an important thing to go and meet the lads and go out and just get out from the family and be that earlier self.
And then on the other side of it, it's important as well for the couple to remember who they were before
kids.
If there are children and all that kind of thing. Like, date night sounds a bit cheesy. I'm a big fan of it. One night away.
Yeah, it's so important.
You can live a lifetime in it, and you totally rediscover.
Absolutely. Even going for a walk together, you know, or just going down to whatever the local there for, you know, a drink, or going for a meal together once a week or once every 2 weeks. It's so important because, and I would often, when we were in the early days of this, let's say with like, you know, infants and all that, three children under like say five, we'd often say, we put a boundary around it and say, let's not talk about the kids now tonight. Because you can even go out and all of the whole conversation is the kids. And you start talking about yourselves again, and you're reconnecting with yourself as an individual. individual who fancies the other person, because, you know, in the house it's, you know, it's chores and it's doing nappies and it's this and it's that and it's really
a role.
It's a role. And so when you go back, you need to go back into the role of like intimacy and relationship, and that's a really important part, because honestly I see it as a couple there that gets eroded with the regularity and the routine of life, and, you know, and one person has feels that they're overwhelmed and they have too much to do, and then they resent the other partner, and then there's no going out, and then they stop going out with each other, and that's all very slowly eroding away at the identity of the couple.
Okay, so know? So kind of like the sex, it doesn't have to be fireworks.
Exactly.
Keep up that habit.
Absolutely.
Time. Okay, when should you be looking for professional help with a relationship? So you see, obviously, these issues coming into you.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose when you find when you're finding it difficult to resolve your conflicts, and how maybe the conflicts are being resolved, or like the stuff that we talked about there early on in this conversation about attachments. And if you notice that, you know, you find it very difficult to communicate with your partner, or that they withdraw emotionally and there's an inability for you to communicate there, I would say maybe, you know, there's no shame in going to talk to somebody. You know, it's a really important thing to go and talk to somebody, because these things can fester and fester and fester. And by the time you kind of think we need a bit of help here, you might have moved past the helping part of this kind of thing, you know.
Okay,
and
so it's go like, early.
Yeah, I would always try to figure it out, try to figure out what the dynamic is. What we, and it's always
and does it
helpful.
when there's a kind of if you will, an objective mediator like in a room, does it help people to maybe be more honest with each other?
It's really interesting, because when couples come into me, right, I often and we often joke about it. There's an awful lot of humor in therapy. I can see them coming in and they're dying to tell me how each one of them is really bad.
Yeah.
The wife is dying to tell me how useless he is, and the husband trying to tell me how much of a nag she might be, right? And so the first thing I asked them is, what did you, you know, where did you meet and what did you see in each other when you met? And all of a sudden that narrative about, you know, how useless they are, or how much they nag me, or how much they're at me all the time, brings them back into contact with what did I actually like about you at the start of this relationship? And all of a sudden you kind of go, I was really attracted to you. I thought you were hot when I first met you and all that. And so all of a sudden you're going back to that narrative, because they're just stories that we tell each other about who we are and who we are in relation to each other. And so in couples therapy, often they come in with this stuff about how bad the thing is going. And actually with a mediator, what you might do is bring them back to how good this thing was and how good this thing can be. And there's problems have come in because of life and all the rest of it. Let's figure out how we react to those struggles, those stressors. Let's react to those in a bit more positive way. And let's reconnect with our earlier selves, and so that we can move forward in a new way.
Okay. And do most people who come to marriage guidance counselling, can they salvage the relationship? A marriage guidance counsellor told me once, she said that, like, she reckoned half the people who come in there were coming in there to try
for a soft landing.
Exactly. Get out in a civilised fashion.
Yes, like that happens
with
for
a witness.
Sure. Yeah, no, you definitely meet that. Okay. Right, the person, one of the members of the relationship doesn't want to take responsibility for the breakup, and is trying to, you know, have the therapy be the thing that causes this breakup to happen, for sure. That does happen, but you know,
but most people willing there,
yeah,
can they
absolutely.
It, yeah?
I fundamentally believe.
So
that.
You can actually, if you think this thing has gone to complete shite, you can actually get it back.
Like, you know, there's a lot of things get said and a lot of things happen. And I mean, physical things happen in relationships and all those really terrible stuff that happens, and there's coercive control and all of those kind of really negative things that can, and really destructive things that can happen. But when a couple comes into therapy, I think, and they have the desire to heal the relationship, I think the greatest obstacles can be overcome.
Okay. I think people might be feeling much more hopeful and upbeat about their marriages and long-term relationships after hearing all that.
Brendan, love is the sum and summit of our earthly experience. It is the greatest thing we do, isn't it?
Yeah.
To love and to be loved?
Yeah.
Is there anything better? Can we build any monument to replicate that?
So
earn any money.
Give it the time and the attention and the effort it requires. And so the thing that has struck a chord with a lot of texters is the chores thing, right?
The which? The chores.
You call them chores, is even the wrong word.
Yeah.
Right? Just one point. Husbands, when seeing your wife is up to her ears in work, kids, house, etc., please don't ask what she wants you to do. After work is seeing what needs to be done. Thank you. Yes, sensible. Someone else says, I'm assuming this is from a woman, no sensible business person would enter into a contract similar to marriage in their work life.
Well,
but right, I think it's cliche to say men aren't taking roles equally at home. Is it indeed, sir? I can say myself and any male friend of a similar vintage, early 40s, are doing more than our fair share at home. If anything, some women are struggling to not have control over all of that and want the rights but not the total responsibility of it. Times have changed and we have too. I'm sick of the "are you giving mom a break" whenever I'm out with my sons, which is often. So complex, mixed messages but I think ultimately all good. Just before you go, when do you know it's time to call it a day? Because I think people can be reluctant.
Yeah. That's a very personal thing there. But ultimately, I'd always have some markers, you know. Am I being respected in my relationship? Am I in danger in my relationship? These are really important things to ask yourself. Is there violence in the relationship? People often think, Brendan, that they're going to stay in the marriage for the sake of the kids. That's a really important thing to think about. In my work, it's often to the detriment of the kids that people stay in relationships. If there's violence, if there's, real threat to someone's safety there. And so people endure these awful, really difficult situations to kind of, as they have the thought in their head, to kind of keep the children happy and all that. And generally, it's not that at all. And so I suppose it's trying to figure out, is there something in this marriage worth resolving and saving? That's a really important thing to think about.
Okay, and I'm going to end on a beautiful text. I love this discussion. We're together 20 years, and in recent years, a progressive critical illness has reared its head in my own life. But I'm managing, and I'm managing because I have a loyal, solid person alongside me, my husband, who has kept the ship steady. I see a new me, but I also see a new him.
Yeah, beautiful.
Okay. Richard Hogan, thank you very much.